This is David Duke, broadcasting to the world on Web Radio. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may live upon the earth, and certainly it's important to all people. Now, yesterday I did a live program with Bob Twain, and we covered some of the Danish cartoon controversy. Again, we have definitely confirmed the fact that the individual behind this cartoon controversy, which is shaking the world and causing tremendous amounts of conflict between Muslims and non-Muslims, this was begun by a man named Fleming Rose, who is in fact of Jewish descent, Ukrainian Jewish descent, actually. So we've confirmed that. There's no doubt about it. He also is an individual, not only is he of Jewish descent, he is associated with the most extreme Jewish supremacist and Jewish extremist elements you could think of. For instance, he is a very close associate with Daniel Pipes, who is one of the neocon warmongers in the United States, who preaches absolute Israeli military superiority and subjection of the Palestinians, conquering all of the Arab lands, etc., etc., Israel from the Nile to the Euphrates, as the Israeli flag depicts. This guy is one of the worst neocons in the United States of America, and this Fleming Rose, I call him Flaming Rose, he stayed with Daniel Pipes at his house in the United States of America. He's very close to him, and this cartoon controversy was never about freedom of speech. Absolutely not. In fact, how can we talk about freedom of speech in Europe when there are men in prison, such as David Irving, men in prison right now, such as Ernst Sandel, the very fine, brilliant chemist and historian, Gamma Rudolph. How can these men be in prison for years and we have so-called freedom of speech? These are men, by the way, who've simply had a different opinion about an historical event. You know, that's why they're sitting behind bars right now in Europe. And sometimes we talk about freedom of speech around the world, and Bush is commonly said to always promote the idea that America is the bastion of freedom, and Europe is the bastion of freedom, and we're the free world. And then we have people in prison because they say things that the Jewish extremists don't like to be said. Because they might question, you know, a small detail or some details of the Holocaust. If some aspect of the Holocaust story they disagree with and they have evidence for, a reason for, and they present it in a decent way, in a pacifist way, in a nonviolent way, in a non-hateful way, you can be put in prison in Europe. And there are men in prison right now. Of course, Iran has recently come back on this issue by sponsoring a Holocaust cartoon contest. And immediately they challenged Fleming Rose and the paper, which he works with in Denmark, to print some of these Holocaust cartoons. Because if it's not just a question of it's free speech is about freedom of speech, not just for what you agree with, but for what you disagree with. And this is obviously an issue of free speech for an issue that this man wants. He wants this controversy, just like the neocons are seeking this World War, what they call World War IV. Now, I'm not joking with you. They literally say that in their literature, in their magazine articles, in their position papers, that they actually seek and want World War IV. And they describe that as World War III being the Cold War, World War II, of course, then World War III being the Cold War, and World War IV being what they call the Clash of Civilizations. By the way, the Clash of Civilizations is another man of Jewish descent. I mean, it's amazing how often you find these individual people of Jewish heritage involved in the in these kinds of actions, in these kinds of disruptive and hateful actions. You know, I don't think there would be. You know, the Muslim nations have never posed any real threat to Europe. At least they, I would say that's untrue. Of course, there was a tremendous threat to Europe during many times in our history. No question about that. But certainly today, with our technology and our ability, there's no threat to Europe. The threat to Europe has come from the fact that our borders have been broken down, and that we're now losing our very soul and spirit and even genetic heritage and cultural heritage and religious heritage in our own respective countries. That's what causes problems. And that's what's causing, in fact, that's what makes us vulnerable to terrorism, by the way, internally. That's what made America vulnerable to terrorism. You know, I respect every other people on the planet. I think that the Muslims should have the right to pursue their own religion. I think that they have the right to have countries that are Muslim in orientation and values. And I can't argue with them if they say, look, they want their culture and their religion to be dominant in the society rather than the Christian religion or the Buddhist religion or Zoroastrianism or anything else. I understand that. And I think people have a right to determine their own culture and their own way of life. But I think we have that same right, too. And I think that in my travels in the Middle East, and I've expressed this opinion, every Muslim I've ever spoken to, whether it be high or low in station, have all said the same thing. Well, we absolutely agree with you. We simply want the right to run our own affairs here at home. Now, a lot of these people that are going and immigrating into European countries and becoming a vast majority, they, again, are trying to assert their power. This is, a rule of life. And there is truly an ethnic cleansing going on in Europe and America today. And it's a terrible process, and it's a process that will destroy and wipe away the traditions and values of Europe. Look at the riots we had in France. Look at the demonstrations, for instance, concerning these cartoons, where these people held up signs, you know, behead these people, and this type of thing, and advocating violence. Now, some have said maybe these people were plants. I don't know if there's plants. I think there's a lot of hatred in each side, and I think that people like Fleming Rose are trying to create and acerbate this hatred and expand this hatred around the world. Because, you see, this hatred, being the fact that the West, America, Europe, has so many nuclear weapons and so much political, economic, social power, I think that they believe that, you know, if we exacerbate a conflict, that they can come out ahead. I think for some crazy reason, they think if we get into a war with Iran right now, that's what they're seeking, that we're going to come out ahead. But let me tell you something. If we nuke part of Iran, that's the only thing we really can do to even stop massive infiltration of the Iranian forces, for instance, into Iraq. I mean, this will become a nightmare for America. We can't even handle Iraq. You know how much of Iraq we control, honestly, the American government or the so-called allies in Iraq? Are the anti-Saddam or the anti-Iraq forces? You know how much of Iraq we really control? Far less than 1%. You see, because the American troops are all in these enclaves, and the truth is they can't go out of these enclaves except under very, very heavily armed guard and convoys. Individual soldiers cannot walk around the streets of Baghdad the same way American soldiers walked around the streets of, say, Berlin after the Second World War. Actually, it was Russians mainly, but part of Berlin was free, West Berlin. American troops could walk around Munich and so forth after the Second World War. They could walk around the streets of Tokyo after the Second World War. They can't do it in Iraq. We don't really control the country at all. There's a little area of Iraq called the Green Zone, which we have a nominal control of, and even there, it's not completely, it's not going to escape, you know, Iraqi resistance bombing and attacks and this type of thing. But we can't even control Iraq. We sure are not going to be able to control a country that's three times, the size of Iraq, and a nation that has a very popular elected fundamentalist government with the people really support. The people really support them. And they have waves. They have tens of thousands of people who are already committed to be suicide bombers if they had to in case of an American invasion. And if we simply just go in there and bomb the things we want to bomb, whether it be the nuclear reactors or whether it be whatever we want to bomb in that particular country, This will unleash a wave of terrorism across the Middle East and across the world that we will never see the end of. And America probably won't be safe anywhere in the world. You know, America might be able to defend our borders to a certain degree. Of course, we don't protect our borders. Look at this open border with Mexico where, you know, you could smuggle an atomic bomb without too much trouble down there. But again, the same people who've opened our borders are the same Jewish neocons, the same Jewish antagonists, the same Jewish extremists that have literally opened the gates of immigration to America and the world. They're the ones that promote so-called multiculturalism in the media. And if you read my book, Jewish Supremacism, and I hope everyone listening to this has already read my book. If not, read some of the chapters that you can find on my website, davidduke.com, www.davidduke.com. And I document there, beyond any shadow of a doubt, the Jewish absolute domination of the thrust toward opening America's borders and changing America from a fundamentally European-American nation to a nation where European-Americans will be a minority and then soon to be a tiny minority where our children will literally walk as strangers in their own land. And not only have they opened our borders in changing this, and this is another subject I want to talk about today that I talked about yesterday with Bob Twain, but unfortunately, we did the program live. Some of you were able to hear it live, but the program, it went. Unfortunately, it crashed on the computer, and we lost the archived version as it was saving. That's never happened before with one of these programs, and that's one reason why we need people, and we need volunteers who are listening to this program live every day to go ahead and save the program, copy. There's many different programs you can use where you can save a streaming broadcast into an MP3 format, like a 128 or even a 32, KBS, whatever. You can save these broadcasts as you listen, and we need people to do that. And James Kelso, Charles Lindbergh, aka Charles Lindbergh, I would suggest he was doing this for a while, and Charles would be very great if you would start to archive these programs as we broadcast them. That way we'll always have a copy. And unfortunately, the live show we had to go out yesterday went away. But I want to talk about some of the issues we talked about yesterday, and we talked about a very interesting subject. And, I talked about how the Jewish supremacists have controlled their immigration, and I've talked about how they're orchestrating this war. I've talked about so many times how they're the ones who've led us into the Iraq War, not for America, not for the interests of the United States of America, not for the security of America. In fact, all we've done is make hundreds of millions of people around the world hate America with a passion. Many tens of millions of people want to kill us. Perhaps tens of thousands of people even maybe sacrifice their lives to kill us and hurt Americans wherever they might be. I mean, this war is a disaster. It's cost us probably, it's already cost us about $300 billion. It's a huge amount of our treasury, a huge amount of our national wealth. But it's actually going to cost somewhere between $1.5 trillion and $2.5 trillion to $3 trillion over the next few years because of the fact that one third, according to Pentagon sources, about one third of the military personnel coming home from Iraq are coming home with serious mental problems that require treatment because of the unbelievable stress and the unbelievable situation you have going on over there. Huge numbers of casualties too. We've had probably more than 20,000. Men and women wounded, emasculated, blinded, crippled, disfigured. They'll come home as a shell of a person. Many will come home as a vegetable. Many will come home without arms and legs. Many will come home without the right and the ability to reproduce anymore. Many will come home not with the ability to see. Many will come home hideously disfigured. And for what? For a lie. For a lie which the Jewish neocons sponsored and people who betrayed us, George Bush, who betrayed the American people, went along with, for whatever reasons, his reasons of power. I mean, that's how he got there. He knew he had to please to get to be president of the United States, and he's still doing it right now. He's still doing it right this minute. So I'll tell you one reason why the people of the world hate us, and it's because what is America bringing to the world? You know, we used to bring things like Walt Disney movies and, ideals and the Western and honor and duty and courage. And now we're bringing so much slop, so much garbage to the world, it's incredible. Occasionally I watch a Jewish movie. I don't hardly ever go to the movies anymore. Well, there is a theater I go to sometimes near my home in Mandeville. where I know the manager and I can get in free. I don't like to give the Jewish Hollywood any funds if I can help it. But I go to some of these movies because I want to have an understanding of what people are watching, listening, average Americans, what they're putting out here, and what the framers and the leaders and the moguls of Hollywood are dishing out to the American people and dishing out to the world. I watch very little television, so I do watch some films to try to get a pulse on the so-called cultural situation in America. Well, Bob Twin and I talked about it. We both viewed a film. I'll tell you, it was excruciating to watch. I mean, it was, I figured if we were going to review it properly, we had to watch it to the end. We didn't want to. We were so sickened and also bored in some places. But it's a film which was produced in 2005, last year, called The Aristocrats. The Aristocrats, that's the name of it. And it was produced by a fellow named Golden, that's the executive producer. And it is absolutely overwhelmingly Jewish in terms of its production, and even more than that, it's Jewish in terms of its values. I was never so offended in a film, I think, in my life. The film is basically about a joke. And it's a joke that's not used on stage much, but it's used almost entirely with the people who are leading comedians in the United States of America. And they share this joke among themselves. And, of course, with this movie, they share it with the public. And the movie kind of documents the joke. And the whole movie is about this one joke and different forms of this joke. And the joke basically goes, and just I'll give you an idea how the joke is, that a man walks into a talent agent's office with his family. And he says, "Have I got an act for you?" The talent agent replies, "Okay, so what do you do?" And that's where the Aristocrats begins. And then they come up with an incredible, incredible, let me give you some quotes from one of the reviews of it, the synopsis in one of the websites. In fact, one of the websites that has a synopsis of it is a website called Rotten Tomatoes, which just deals with movies where, you throw Rotten Tomatoes at the screen. And if a tomato is intact, that is, it's not been thrown, that's a positive percentage. And they also list many common reviews on this website called RottenTomatoes.com. And let me quote a couple things from their synopsis of the film. It says, "Some may be surprised, however, to see performers who are normally associated with family-friendly material, including Bob Saget and Jason Alexander, by the way, two Jewish guys, describing scatological and incestuous acts with deadpan glee. Ultimately, though, The Aristocrats is more than just many versions of the same dirty joke. It's an exploration of the workings of the unrestricted comic mind." And the filmmaker says, "That's my goal. I want everyone to see who sees our movie to enjoy it. I really do. So far, we've done a good job." Okay, now listen to this. Here's one person, Kinky Friedman. You know who he is. He says, "Don't say shit in front of a child." He says, but he says, here's another synopsis of the movie. Now listen to this for a moment, and I'm just going to quote directly from the review. Are from the synopsis. "Think of the most disgusting images you can. Think of the worst scatological and non-consensual sex you can. Imagine children. Imagine young children. Imagine children that are related to each other. Children who are related to you. Imagine animals. Young endangered animals who are related to each other. Young endangered animals related to you. Nope, you're not even close. This movie is over 100 professionals. They are much more disgusting than you can ever be. That's because they're professionals. The movie is a lot more than dirty words and disgusting images." And it goes on and on. And now, this movie is incredible. It's just every joke practically has tremendous references to scatological material. In other words, with human refuse, human excrement, and spewing it on each other and throwing it on each other, and it's just incredible, and human sexual emissions, and it's an incest, fathers doing sons and daughters, grandmothers. I mean, just even necrophilia, sex with the dead, all these things are just talked about, and along with the murder, mayhem. I mean, just unbelievable. It's one of the most disgusting things you ever heard. Now, let me. You almost have to. You know, I wouldn't recommend it, but I showed it to another friend here in Moscow, where I was when I saw the screening of the film, and showed it for 15 minutes, and it was really amazing because this friend, who is not quite up on the Jewish question and understanding of the alien culture now that has been set in the midst of our media conglomerate, that's set in the midst of our cultural mechanism in the West and in Hollywood, where most of it emanates. He saw this film and he began to get the idea. He began to understand. He told me, he said, it seemed like there were aliens from another planet. In other words, they were so alien to the values of the people. Here's some of the reviews, and you can find a lot of these reviews on RottenTomatoes.com, so you can check out what I'm saying here. Here's a good example by Paul Arndt. Same name as the Hannah Arndt, the one who wrote the expose of Eichmann. Very Jewish name. Quote, the film has the feel of a long and fascinating chat rather than a formal thesis, but it feels a little self-congratulatory at times. But that's a small price to pay. He gave it thumbs up, and there's no smashed tomato there. Here's one, filthy but hilarious. Here's another one. This is Gene Offmuth. One-of-a-kind cinema, an epic roller-coaster ride of tawdry, pond-scumming filth, guaranteed to offend. And she gave it thumbs up. In comedy as in life, it's the journey, not the outcome. That proves the most fascinating. That's from Marjorie Baumgarten. From Joshua Bell, Las Vegas Weekly. It's funny, and it makes you think. Isn't that the definition of a good joke? Here's one, Sean Burns in the Philadelphia Weekly. The movie is a scandal. It's an outrage. It's a joy. Here's one from the Kansas City Star. The results are unbelievably gross, and once you get with the program, side-splittingly funny. It just goes on and on and on. For anyone who can take it, this is one of the smartest and funniest movies of the year. It's just amazing, and this is a material. And this was, if you read this, it's overwhelmingly reviewed in a positive way. I think they got 86% positive on the positive meter. I mean, that's pretty amazing. Boston Globe, you know, a working demonstration of pleasures of the profane. Here's one, a masterclass in comedy in all its cruel, larkish, obsessive creativity. You know who wrote that? Richard Corliss. Of Time Magazine, the leading news magazine in the United States of America. Here's another one from Minneapolis Star Tribune. The film's value is as a look at comedy and creativity. Here's one from The New Yorker, one of the major magazines in America. Exudes cheerfulness and expansive joy. Here's one from Robert Dinnerstein, Denver Rocky Mountain News. Overly long and not always funny, The Aristocrats of Fins offers the backstage pleasures of listening to comedians talk about a joke. He also gave it a thumbs up. Dwayne Dudek. It's tactically funny exercise and vulgarity of the sort for which the First Amendment appears to have been invented. Here's one from David Edelstein, a Slate magazine. There is a special kind of pleasure in hearing jokes that have no redeeming social value. I like to think that this is their social value, an invitation to free the mind. So ladies and gentlemen, you know, you want to know why the world doesn't like America, why so much of the world does? Well, I guess the world that's chic, the world that's tuned in to the mass media, or at least some of these elite, because they know what they've got to do to pleasure. You know, I saw they had a number of Gentile comedians on the movie as well. It was actually a small percentage. It was overwhelmingly Jewish. But, you know, they were just as down and dirty as the other guys, except actually a few of them didn't even tell the joke, and the Smother Brothers kind of dealt with it, and they just didn't even want to deal with it, and they didn't even find it funny. They even kind of made it clear they didn't find it funny. Tim Conway too, but he didn't deal with anything dealing with the joke. I mean, they had a few Gentiles on there, and there are certainly lots of Gentiles who learned to play the Jewish extremist tune. You know, and I call this Jewish extremism too. I don't know if all Jews agree with this kind of the garbage. I don't know how anybody in America can even find this movie funny. You know, but it's just amazing. This Jewish extremism that is dominating our culture, it's absolutely evil. I mean, and I can understand when you see something like that. This is the coordination. This is the corollary with like the tortures at Abu Ghraib or the secret prisons in Eastern Europe or what happened during the Bolshevik Revolution. Because only a coarse and evil and hateful individual could even make jokes about this, saying that the raping and violation in graphic detail of children, little girls and little boys, and animals and everything else. I mean, it's just absolutely sick. And this whole movie is about that. So the movie itself is just an absolute expression of the depths of this culture. People often say, you know, the Jewish contribution to our country and our culture has been so great. There's no question they've made some contributions. They've been some great pianists and great violinists and great, you know, performers among Jews in Western culture and art. There's no doubt about that. But there's also no doubt about it that they have been the source, overwhelming source, of so much of the absolute destructive character of our civilization. I quote from one of the rabbis that even talk about this, Rabbi Lapin. And he says, you know, he says people can understand why Hitler talked about, you know, when you start discovering all the hideous and the violent stuff. Look at the cartoon controversy, for instance. You know, it's like in America, people get, you know, the Islamic people, the Muslims are getting upset about, you know, misappropriate portrayal of their religious figure, you know, Muhammad. But, you know, how often has the same Jewish establishment in the West given an unbelievably sick portrayal of Jesus Christ? Now, whether people believe in Jesus Christ or not, you know, does someone have to portray Jesus Christ in urine, like an artist did in a photograph of the crucifix upside down in urine? Does someone have to portray the mother Mary spanking and being a child abuser to baby Jesus? I mean, this is the kind of stuff, and a lot of this stuff is state financed. It's actually supported by our government. And this cartoon controversy was never about freedom. This controversy was about going after. Now, while they have these kind of movies, they're just absolutely filthy. And you know, and I was talking to Bob Twain about this for a little while, and I pointed out to him. I said, you know, always there's, in any society there's been crazy people. Of course, with all the pressures of society now, there's probably more crazy than ever, and there's more drug use, which can take a person far beyond whatever fragile mental state they're in into an absolutely psychotic state. But always before, when you had a crazy person, how was craziness portrayed in the movies? Basically, craziness was portrayed for decades in the movie industry, and we never did show much blood and gore, by the way, in any movie. Even in we have a war, they kind of didn't show much blood or anything like that. But, you know, the crazy person was kind of played as somebody silly sitting in the corner playing with a whatever. The movie industry, as it's become completely Jewish and dominated and free to do whatever they want to, is they control our society and enable their expressions of so-called culture to be the dominant culture. You take a look at what goes on, and it's like, you know, and it's these slasher movies. How many movies do we have of these sexual perverts, you know, slashing, beating, raping, and all that? Often the camera angle comes from the eyes of the pervert themselves. Now, crazy people go to movies too, and they see HBO, and they see television, and they see the rest. And when they see this, they see crazy people going out, raping people, killing girls, and all this other kind of thing. And then they think, well, that's what I'm supposed to do. In a way, this movie, by making light of anally raping children and making them bleed and suffer. I mean, it's just, this movie is so gross, it's unbelievable. By doing that, it kind of even says to those perverts, it's not such a big deal. Look, all these major figures are talking about. And if you've got a twisted mind, you know, it lets these guys, you know, kind of justify themselves and what they do, you know, and we have that kind of society right now, and it's not a healthy society at all. A parent today doesn't even want their child especially if they're 6 or 7 or 8 years old, ride the bus alone. Even if they're 11 or 12 years old, ride the bus alone, or the subway alone, or walk the streets often by themselves because of the danger of kidnapping and the danger of these perverts who grab their child and kill them. This didn't used to go on. You know, I really believe that this massive increase in pedophilia, this massive increase in the child kidnapping and torture and rape and abuse, that this absolutely has coincided with this cultural change brought on by these extremist Jews. Now, I've already talked about, and if you go to my website, davidhoot.com, you'll get a full rendition and a full story on the pornography racket. And it talks about how that the pornography racket was totally and has been almost totally dominated by Jews. And they quote many of these Jews doing a lot of the pornography, like Goldstein was one of the major pornographers in the United States years ago. And you can see this incredible anti-Christian, anti-Western, anti-white, anti-establishment attitude that they have. They feel like they're shooting the bird at our culture and our people by doing this. They love to see our people destroyed, weakened. Reminds me of the fact that the Israeli government actually showed when they captured Jenin, they actually took over the television station, the Palestinian television station, and during daytime hours, after school hours, in fact, they showed hardcore pornography on the broadcast television channels. Hardcore pornography. Because they thought that would weaken and destroy the Palestinians. Well, you see, I think that they're at war not just against the Palestinian people, not just against the Islamic people. You know, they're like these cartoon shows. They're at war against us. But they dominate us, and they manipulate us, and they've manipulated us with this cartoon controversy. And they manipulated us with so-called multiculturalism. They've manipulated us with the Iraq war. They're manipulating us right now into the Iran war. And, you know, and some people kind of give up. They say, well, there's nothing we can do about it. They got so much power. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we can't give up. We have no choice. If they succeed, you know, they will immerse this world in blood. They are moving toward that right now, if they're successful, if no one stands up to them. And more than that, they will immerse our people and the people of the world into this same vicious kind of culture that results in these, you know, hundreds of thousands of kids being kidnapped or raped or abused, in the destruction of our most basic moral tone and values in the United States of America and around the world. Well, that's my 2 cents for the day on the aristocrats and the cartoon controversy. And I'll certainly be with you tomorrow. And I want to wish all of you a very, very happy and lovely Valentine's Day. It's a very European traditional holiday and celebration day, and it celebrates the highest ideals of romantic love and passion. And that's something, by the way, around the world that Europeans have developed to a fine art, from the Cavalier Knights and so much of our history and heritage, and also this great reverence for women, which is certainly almost exclusively a trait of the European people. It's a fantastic trait, and it's amazing. When I see European women who support feminism and who also support this transformation of the West to a third world country, don't they understand how women are treated in the third world? And European men are not perfect in terms of their treatment of women, but compared to the third world, like Mexico, where the women basically, you know, work like dogs and are beaten by the men if they you know, don't obey at every point. If you compare, you know, Western civilization and our values, at least we did put women up on a pedestal. I mean, these other cultures never even had a structure of art or literature or cultural critique that actually accepted that they gave any women any sort of special. In fact, most cultures, like for instance the American Indian culture in America, the Indian women were just treated like sometimes they walked behind the horses and the dogs. I'm not trying to exaggerate anything. That's the reality of it. And if you go into the reservations even today, the women are treated incredibly difficult, and they're treated far worse on a per capita basis in terms of wife beating and mistreatment and the rest of it than are European American women. And you can make that whatever you want. You can say you blame that on American, you know, whatever control over Indians or whatever. But there is a real difference, and you know the. The Indians have, again, they have the right to their culture, their heritage, but I'm talking about what I believe you value, and I think I value and you value the treatment of women to be decent and fair and great. And by the way, in this cause, we need the efforts of good and loyal and dedicated and courageous women. And, you know, if we're not successful, these women are going to suffer a terrible fate, and their children are going to have to suffer this fate. They have a right to try to help and defend our culture and our society. And we need them as full partners in this fight. And I really suggest that all patriotic groups make sure that there is no bias in terms of allowing women to do it. You know, whatever they have talents for to do, that's great. And in fact, a woman spokesman is often sometimes the best spokesman because it breaks down stereotypes about our cause. You know, maybe this cause needs, in the United States and in Europe, you know, a Joan of Arc. Maybe a few Joan of Arcs here and there. I think it would do a lot of good for our cause. A woman political figure, for instance, of our persuasion, talking about the racial problem and talking about, you know, the Iraq war and the Jewish supremacist issue and the other issues would be a fantastic asset. And it'd be very, very difficult. There's a built-in kind of, she has a built-in protection, so to speak. She has a built-in set of armor. Because the media has pushed this feminist material for so long. So we need women involved in the fight, and I'm not trying to push women in that direction, but I'm saying that we certainly need all people, men and women, in this fight who are willing to stand up and work and speak and lead. And if we don't have that, and we don't do some very intelligent things soon and some very powerful and you know, political acts and political maneuvers soon, our race is simply, our heritage is simply going to pass from the earth. And I do believe, as always, that our people have a right to live. Okay, this has been David Duke, and I want to tell you that I appreciate your support. I'm sorry we lost the archive yesterday. Hopefully this archive will go through without a problem. And I will be back with you tomorrow. Thanks so much. Bye-bye now.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddukedave.com.